How do you say goodbye to someone like Mark Bittman? He's the voice of food in the New York Times and in my kitchen. His dog-eared cookbooks are hanging off my shelves. When I cook, it's like he's there, telling me a story about this or that ingredient.
I was at this dinner a year or so ago, and I was discussing a dish with somebody, and she said, "What salt would you use with that?" And I just burst into, I don't know, laughter or tears or anger. And then I was telling that story recently, and someone said, "Well, you know, I don't know why you think that's so outrageous. Of course it matters what salt you use." So that's the kind of change in the food scene that I think we could probably do without, actually.
Bittman has been a commentator for the New York Times for the last 5 years in very interesting times. The profile of food has gone up, but the public's understanding of the consequences of agriculture, he says, has not. Trying to close that gap is what led Bittman to pitch his opinion column to the Times in the first place. And to his surprise, they went for it.
It just seemed to me that everything was affecting food, and food was really, you know, you could compare it to economics or politics. It's there in everything. And there are people who don't realize that. There are people who would argue with it, but there are people who I think have their heads in the sand and still think food is fun. And food is fun. Food is wonderful. We all know that. But it's so much more than that. And it's just, I think, the awareness level of food and political unrest, food and climate change, food and health, for sure, food and the environment, resources, and so on, has just increased exponentially in the last 5 or 10 years. And I was lucky to have caught that on a kind of leading edge 5 years ago.
What would you say is the most disturbing feature of complacency as far as New York Times readers are concerned regarding what's really happening in the world of food and what we see when we wander through Whole Foods and see that the world is actually perfect?
Well, you know, New York Times readers are composed of people like you and me and people who are way more powerful than you and me and people who are way less. The people who are way more powerful scare me the most because, to me, the relationship between food, that is agriculture, and climate change is the scariest thing, and there's no attention, almost no attention paid to it. And I'm not talking about the impact of climate change on agriculture. I'm talking about the impact of agriculture on climate change. And that we've known about this for 10 years or more, and there have been almost no changes in the world of food and agriculture to mitigate its impact on climate change.
Are these things like methane production in livestock? In, you know, what are you talking about?
Well, we're talking about transportation of food because so much of the food in the United States and elsewhere travels so far. So there's that transportation carbon footprint thing. We're talking about methane production. Yes, we're talking about the fact that some methods of farming sequester carbon much, much better than other methods of farming. We're talking about what it takes to feed cattle and other livestock. We're talking about a whole host of things that could be addressed, and each of which could make significant contributions to reducing greenhouse gases.
But that's not reflected in people's food choices, even though it might be a political discussion.
You've hit the nail on the head. There are both personal choices and there's a political discussion. So on a personal level, I and many others argue that the more plants we eat, the smaller our carbon footprint, the better off we all are. And obviously from a health perspective, that's true too. But on a political level, it continues to kind of baffle me that 98% of attention is paid to fossil fuel reduction. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that, but the balance is off. We're not looking at agriculture. I think that just speaks to the power of the agriculture lobby.
What have you managed to sound the signal on, do you think, effectively?
It's hard for me to speak about the impact because I was in this moment. I was of this moment. I don't feel like I caused it or led it in any way. But the one thing that I think I was early on was the relationship or the role of food workers in food, which is a sort of an obvious thing to say. But 5 years ago, and certainly a little bit longer ago, people who considered themselves foodies or whatever term you want to use cared more about the welfare of animals than they did about the welfare of human beings in the food system. And that has changed and is changing. Again, nothing wrong with talking about and considering animal welfare, but when the people who bring us food, who are arguably among the most important workers in the country, cannot afford to buy the food that they're producing, there's something wrong with that. And I think more and more people are recognizing that. The fight for 15, the fight for a minimum wage that's almost twice what the national minimum wage is now, was really led by and has been led by food workers, and to some extent, no small extent, with the support of people who would call themselves foodies. And I think I did have some impact on that. But in any case, it's a good development.
What is it about corporate startups that attracts you, aside from, you know, the obvious?
I mean, I wrote about what I like to call fast food 2.0 or whatever a few years ago. And around that time, I said, you know, I'm interested in doing a fast food business. And I pitched stuff and I went to venture capitalists and had conversations. And I think in a way, the problem was that I was not focused enough, that I was way too into the opinion column and the other journalism that I was doing to really say, okay, I'm dropping all of this and I'm all in on whatever idea I had. But this was an idea that came to me, and it's a really good idea. And I thought, this is the right time to make this kind of change. It's not that I feel done with journalism by any means, but I've always been a person who's changed what I'm doing, and I like new things. And I just didn't see what was next that was going to be as exciting as what I'd done in journalism. And this thing, which I've been involved in for now, I don't know, since mid-May, is all-encompassing, and it's the kind of excitement that I want. So whether it's a success or a failure, it's been already been 4 months of super fun. And I think when it becomes more public and when we launch, I think it's just going to be totally amazing.
Is there any place in the world that the cuisine interests you more now than when you started this gig?
Yeah, the United States.
Really?
I don't say that lightly. It's something I've thought about a lot. I find myself traveling internally, domestically, much, much more and not being frustrated by it. Domestically, we are doing amazing things. There's no limit to the energy and passion of people who are cooking and who are involved in food right now in the United States, and other places seem pokey by comparison. It's all right here. I mean, it goes back to where we started this conversation. It's all right here, but our agricultural scene, the lack of planning, the lack of thought, the lack of a discussion of the right of people to eat affordably and healthily and in a way that's environmentally sound, all of that I really think is a tragedy. But the flip side of that coin is that there's enormous energy being put into creating great food in the U.S. right now, and it's a fun, interesting time.
Until this month, Mark Bittman was an op-ed columnist at the New York Times and the Times Magazine's food columnist.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.